Here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission, our passion is wild. Tune in to our podcast, Call of the Outdoors, as we discuss all things related to wildlife, hunting, habitat, and conservation across the Keystone State. Hear from men and women who have a passion for the outdoors and who value and work to preserve our state's wildlife resources for current and future generations.
Well, welcome back to Call of the Outdoors, the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast. It's that time of year, and for me personally, it's my favorite time of year. Snow's melted, grass is getting green, and we're talking about wild turkeys today. And a very special guest in our studio, which is now a makeshift studio. But anyway, we have Mary Jo Castellina, who is our wild turkey biologist and the most important biologist here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission. Good morning, Mary Jo.
Good morning, Matt.
It's great to have you, and I can tell you from myself and somebody upstairs that's all of our bosses, the wild turkey is so special here at the Game Commission, and it's kind of funny to see the buzz going out there. You know, we're seeing some, everybody's seeing turkeys starting to strut and hearing them gobble, and it's here, and that's why we're here. We're going to talk about them today, so welcome. Thank you for taking the time out to come down, but, you know, let's just get right to it and about your, a little bit about your personal history here at the Game Commission. How long have you worked for our agency?
Yeah, so I just celebrated my 28th year, believe it or not. I must have started...
You're 29 years old.
Yeah, I must have started when I was about 12, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's awesome. 28 years. And have you been with doing wild turkey research your whole time, or is it...
No. So, yeah, I began as wild turkey biologist back in 1999. I started out with the Game Commission as a pheasant biologist and then moved over to waterfowl. I thought I was going to stay as waterfowl biologist, but then... this opportunity opened up with wild turkeys, and to tell you the truth, it's my favorite species to hunt. I mean, I love hunting waterfowl and deer, of course, because I like to fill the freezer every year, just like most hunters. But there's just nothing like the, you know, the roar of the gobble in this spring that just gets my heart pumping like you wouldn't believe.
Do you get goosebumps like I do?
Oh, I hyperventilate. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to keep the gun straight because I'm just so excited. And then, you know, I finally calm down. And it's regardless if I'm calling the bird in for myself or for my husband or for, you know, a kid or whatever. You know, and actually my daughters, they don't turkey hunt with me anymore. But when they were youth, then they didn't like shooting, which was fine.
Sure.
So they actually, 2 years in a row, both of my daughters called turkeys in for me. And so I was really glad to have that second bird tag because,
absolutely,
you know, I was able to... to have, because they were, you know, both my tags, since I was the one that was shooting. So, you know, I got to have the girls call turkeys in for me.
I've got to carry a lot of people turkey hunting in my life, and I always enjoy taking a young girl or somebody that's, you know, an adult that never turkey hunted, because it's one of those interactions when you're talking to that. Like you said, your daughters love to call them up, and that's great. So you do call your turkey, you call turkeys for your husband?
Yeah,
That's awesome. I love that.
Well, what can I say?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, now I'm the turkey biologist, so but I need to specify to everybody, I am not a very good turkey caller, but I think that's, you know, that kind of just shows to you that, you know, you don't have to be an award-winning turkey caller in order to get a nice gobbler.
Absolutely not.
You just have
not,
to be,
yeah.
You know, you have to be patient. You have to know, you do have to kind of know, you know, when to call, when not to, and what calls to use. But, I mean, you know,
but
you don't have to. When
you spend your life with turkeys, you know what to say to them. I mean, I wish we were videotaping this because, y'all, Mary Jo has turkey feather earrings in right now. So if you know that you're ready for turkey season when you have turkey feather earrings in, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what made you come to work at the Pennsylvania Game Commission? I mean, what was that, a career that you set out for, or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was. And I knew when I was in seventh grade that I wanted to work as a biologist. I had a conservation biology class in seventh grade, and it was then I realized that there's nobody out there to speak for wildlife. And, you know, wildlife needs a spokesperson. And if we're going to protect habitat and, you know, and conserve wildlife, then we need to do that. You know, people need to step up. The Game Commission, I realized, had, you know, even back then in the 1980s, had, you know, over 1 million acres of state game lands. And I thought, wow, you know, if I'm going to work for conserving wildlife and conserving habitat, then what better agency to work for than the Pennsylvania Game Commission, who has all that habitat for managing and for research. And so it was really, I grew up in suburban New Jersey.
What?
And yeah. And you know, and I knew just across the river, man, you know, Pennsylvania really knows what's going on. We would summer in the Poconos and up in Maine, you know, so we had woods behind our house, believe it or not, in New Jersey. But that was the other thing that sent me to, you know, to conservation and to wildlife management. When I couldn't see the stars at night from my, you know, from my window in my house, I knew that I was not going to stay in New Jersey nice. For the rest of my life. It just, you know, it just, I needed to be able to, you know, to commune with nature, so to speak. And you know, Pennsylvania just has so much habitat that is, you know, that is protected and managed for wildlife.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great story. And the diversity in Pennsylvania, a lot of us that are residents of PA take it for granted what we have in our state, the just the diversity from mountains to farmland to just everything in between. And I love that fact that you said, when I want to see the stars at night, because people don't realize when you get out in the middle of nowhere at 4 o'clock in the morning turkey hunting, you look up in the sky and it's a spiritual experience. It really is. And I love that. That's awesome. So let's get to the nuts and bolts a little bit. Let's talk about turkeys. I mean, you've been living with them since 1999. Is that what you said?
Yes.
So, you know, obviously you've seen peaks and valleys, ups and downs, and you know, there's a lot of stuff out there today with social media and the internet and all that. And you know, everybody kind of makes their own assumptions. But, you know, what biologists do, first of all, you know, so many people think of the Game Commission, and I hear this a lot. They say, well, the people at the Game Commission don't hunt. Prime example, our wild turkey biologist that spends every day that in the field and studying turkeys loves turkey hunting, that you haven't gotten tired of it. And that just says something about the gobble and the really addiction to the sport. But, you know, where's our turkey flock at today in Pennsylvania? I mean, you're looking, you know, at populations, how's the health of it? If we could just give our listeners a little snapshot of what's happening here in our own state.
Yeah, sure. Our current population has definitely declined slightly compared to the previous 10-year average. So, you know, you're looking at about 10 years ago, it was about 215,000 turkeys statewide. Now we're about 196,000 statewide. It does vary by wildlife management unit. You know, we have 23 wildlife management units, so it does vary. But, you know, there are local areas where the turkey population has declined, just like the you know, it is for the state. However, you know, how we're managing the turkey population is really through our fall turkey harvest strategies. And so we've been really, you know, decreasing fall turkey season lengths, about 14 management units. And since 2014, we've decreased season length. And actually this year we have about 15 wildlife management units that are below goal for turkey populations. And so we've really grown to understand that fall turkey harvest is really a key to population management as well as habitat management. And so we're, you know, we're really focusing on scaling back fall seasons as much as possible to allow that turkey population to increase. Like, we, you know, our goal is to bring that turkey population in most of our management units back up to, you know, two goals. Probably won't ever get to the point where they were back in 1999 to 2001, you know, and mainly that's because at that point, our turkey populations were exponentially growing, and they just grew so exponentially by 2001. I mean, there was almost literally a turkey behind every tree. We're not going to get to that point again. And a lot of it has to do with habitat, you know, from 2001 to 2021, you know, that's a 20-year period, that, you know, we just don't have that great habitat that we had.
Mm-hmm. And habitat changes, too.
Habitat changes, and we are changing habitat. I mean, we are creating a lot more young forested habitats, which is real important for nesting. And, you know, but part of our problem is, you know, our spring weather has been fluctuating so much. Our recruitment, I don't think we'll ever get to the point where, you know, we will see that, you know, 5 poults per hen, you know, in several years in a row, like we would have, you know, back in the early 2000s.
What's the average today of poults per hen?
In Pennsylvania, the average poults per hen is about 2.5 to 2.8 okay. poults per hen. So it's less than 3 poults per hen on average in Pennsylvania. And I would really like to see 3 poults per hen. Research back when turkey populations were exponentially growing would state that 3.3 poults per hen was adequate. And we don't see that in Pennsylvania anymore. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, that's when we don't need that exponential growth. But, you know, we would like to have, 2.5 to 3 poults per hen on an average year.
And a lot of folks, myself included, I always thought that every hen would mate and every hen would nest. And when you say 3 poults per hen, that means every hen has 3 poults. But that's not how that's gauged, obviously. And if you could just go into a little bit of detail of, you know, how many hens truly do nest. And, you know, obviously Jennies don't have that. They have that instinct, but they don't know what they're doing. You know, young hens, just so we can get kind of a snapshot out there to the listeners, because I hear it all the time where it was like, oh, I saw 5 hens and, you know, they should be sitting on nest, but there's a reason for that.
Right. Yeah. And so a hen coming into the breeding season, she has physiological constraints before she can produce an egg. And so if she's a first-year hen and it was a hard winter and there was no food, then she's not going to have the resources. She's not going to have the amount of fat or, you know, body weight in order to produce eggs. If it's a Jenny and, you know, a first-year hen and, you know, she's in somewhat limited capacity, she might have enough eggs in her to lay one nest. And most of our first year hens will typically lay one nest or lay a clutch for one nest. But the problem is they're inexperienced, and so they might not lay their nest in adequate habitat. So that nest will either get predated or by a predator, or she might abandon it because, you know, of too much disturbance, and she won't have enough energy to re-nest. Whereas your older hens, if they're coming off with a lot of mast, a lot of acorns out there in the fall, the winter wasn't that harsh. Even if you had early spring green up, even if you had a hard winter and low mast, if you have early green up where they can, you know, rejuvenate their body condition, then they can adequately lay as many eggs as they need to lay, and they can re-nest if their first and second and third nest are predated, or if they have to abandon them, then they can re-nest. Their clutch sizes will be slightly lower, every time they have to re-nest. But, so it's those adult hens that are really the masters of the reproductive world for turkeys.
Those old mama hens. That's what a lot of the old-time turkey hunters would say, old mama hens. And there's something to be said about that.
Yeah.
It takes that special hen to be successful. And a turkey really doesn't – I mean, their chances of survival at that is very, very tough at that young age from once they are an egg till when they're hatched, to make it to what, 2 or 3 weeks, what survive? Do you have a number on survival rate?
If a poult is hatched, then about a third of them will survive. But it all depends on the habitat, and all, you know, it all depends on your local area. But on average, you know, for a stable population, it's about a third of the poults will survive. And you know, so if you have cold, rainy weather during your first peak of hatch, which is about the last week of May to the first week of June, then that's, you know, that's not looking good for, right, for your reproductive success, for your, you know, your overall poult survival. You know, if you think about it, a hen, even an adult hen, you know, she might have 15 young poults running around. If it's cold and rainy, she's got to brood those. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to fit all those little poults, you know, underneath your mm-hmm. body for hours at a time?
After you've just sat on eggs for 28 or whatever straight days.
Yeah, 28 days. Yeah.
I mean,
it's tough. And, you know, and so if they're, you know, if they're making a lot of noise, then they're attracting predators. If the hen is completely soaked, wet, then her odor is attracting predators. Her whole goal, once she hatches her poults, her whole goal is to get those poults feeding constantly, because they want to put on as much body mass as possible so that they can roost above ground at night. That's their goal, to get off of the ground and roost up in trees at night. While they're on the ground at night, you know, they're just
vulnerable.
Yeah, they're just so vulnerable. So, you know, if you have good weather, then they can not only, they don't have to brood as much, they can feed more often. And what they're feeding on is really important. You know, they're feeding on insects almost exclusively, because that's that protein source that they need to put on that, you know, to build those feathers in order to be able to fly up into trees at night. And so if they have plenty of insects during that dry, warm weather, you know, when you have cold, wet weather, then you have fewer insects emerging.
Sure. Well, so, you know, central Pennsylvania, I don't know if there's any scientific facts, but cicada hatch this year is our 17th year. And I'm so excited for the cicada hatch, because everywhere I've ever been, it seems like the cicada, when the good hatch, good brooding years, as long as the weather's dry, you see a lot more turkeys. And
yes.
I don't know if it's the protein or the predators or after, I don't know what it's all about, but I'm excited. You know, right here in where the office is here in Harrisburg and Perry County, where I live, this is our year. So
right, exactly.
We got our fingers crossed that we're going to do a non-rain dance the last week of May and the first couple weeks of June. But
and that's when the cicadas are supposed to emerge. So that's perfect.
It is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, granted, a young poult's not going to be able to eat a whole cicada, but you know, as they grow, I mean, luckily the cicadas will be around long enough.
That's right. So anybody that's a turkey hunter and you get annoyed by the locusts out there buzzing in your ears, you know, just you might want to be extra special, thankful for them this year,
right,
because it might mean wonderful things. But a little bit of, you know, I remember how I got into turkeys so much. My dad loved turkeys in the 70s, and I'd go with him before I could hunt. And, you know, he'd do a lot of scouting, and there wasn't hardly any turkey hunters around Dauphin County. There was a few, but there also wasn't turkeys. Like there was, you know, if you're comparing people that compare our populations, like you said, in the heyday in the 99-2000 era, the 70s and 80s, it was not nearly as good as it is today. I mean, I remember hunting the entire turkey season with my dad, or, you know, when I was in the 80s, when I was 12 years old. And if we heard a turkey, we hunted that turkey, because it might be the only one we heard. So, you know, we are leaps and bounds above where we have been in the past, no doubt about it. And like you said, creating better habitats and the projects and the studies that you do, like I wanted to hit on that one next about the project, and it's an award-winning project when your research with the West Nile virus. You know, we know that it has some effect on grouse populations. And if you would just hit on what you found, you know, preliminary or, you know, where you're at today with that project.
Yeah. So I'm really glad you asked about that. Now, while the final results are still pending the graduate student's thesis finalization, our preliminary results show that the turkey poults and bobwhite quail, cause you know, they were part of that study too. So we inoculated the poults and the quail with West Nile virus. They were not affected by the virus like the, like the grouse were. That's
great news, except for the grouse. That stinks. Well, but right. For turkeys and quail, that's awesome.
Yeah. Now, we did some preliminary microscopic analysis for the turkeys, and it did show some mild heart inflammation on some birds of both, actually turkeys and quail, and mild brain inflammation in some of the turkeys, but nothing that would impair survival like it did in the grouse. So that's also very reassuring for turkeys and quail. And it's really interesting how species-specific West Nile virus is.
That's unbelievable.
Now, we are continuing that study. So we've been collecting blood samples from fall-harvested turkeys. And so from 1999, we found out that about 33% of the fall-harvested turkeys did have antibodies to fight the West Nile virus infection. So that means that they survived. You know, they were bitten, but they do have the West Nile virus antibodies in them, but they survived. And so obviously the higher the percentage of survivors in your population means, you know, that means you have good survival from West Nile virus. We still have 2 more years of that research. We do have the 2020 fall samples, but I've been so busy with turkey trapping this winter, I haven't been able to get those samples organized to ship them down to our lab in Georgia. So they will be shipped here in the next few weeks.
Well, we'll talk about turkey trapping in 1 second, but I do have a question, and there might not be an answer to this. And as you well know, there's lots of wives' tales or, you know, folk about turkeys, and I've been in Florida a couple times where the mosquitoes are about as big as a turkey. I mean, it's just crazy. And, you know, the gobblers kind of shut down when it gets hot. And I've had people tell me a couple things. one person one time told me they shut down because they get in the shade because their head gets sunburned. I don't know if I believe that. But I do believe that when the mosquitoes are real bad, we don't really see it like that here. But I've had many folks tell me that the turkeys actually try to get away from that because of getting bit. Do you think there's any merit to that, or?
It could. I really don't know. That's
one thing about about biologists is that, and I respect this through the roof of where we're sitting, is that if there's no data, they're not going to give you a yes or
absolutely,
no answer.
Absolutely, you're right. I know. I'm thinking, I've never read a study about that,
I've heard a bunch of, you hear a bunch of stuff that makes sense in your head, because who likes to get bit by mosquitoes? But, you know, if you ever watched a sunrise in the swamps of Florida, you start hearing and all of a sudden the mosquitoes wake up, and it's like that helicopter was across the street. It's just a constant buzz, but.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, yeah, exactly. I'm not gonna state one way or another because I haven't read any scientific journal articles about that.
Absolutely. You know, and being from Pennsylvania, it's, you know, we have the most members of the National Wild Turkey Federation. We have over 200,000 turkey hunters. It's so popular in this state. And, I mean, that's why I got so hooked on it at a young age. And I mean, if I can just listen to a turkey gobble every day of my life, I feel like I'm better. I feel like things are better. I don't have to call one up and shoot it. Matter of fact, I'd rather go out and show someone else the sport. But that's just me personally. If you would just a little bit talk about some of the diseases. I'm gonna go off the script here for a second. Then we kind of have some notes jotted down. Some of the diseases that wild turkeys that's common in wild turkeys. And on the flip side of that, I want to encourage, and maybe yourself too, and encourage the folks out there when we do like summer sighting surveys and information that we're trying to get back from the folks that are out there in the field, it's so important that we work together on these projects, especially as we see a decline, is because y'all are trying to figure things out. I mean, that's, as science, we need all that information as much as possible. And sometimes people don't realize how important the public is. We're all in this together. Hunting is a tool of conservation, and anytime they can get you feedback. So if we talk about the diseases and some of the encouragement that feedback that would help you in the future in your research.
Yeah. So in terms of diseased wildlife or diseased turkeys in particular, Yeah, we do encourage people to report turkeys that they see that, you know, are likely to be diseased if they're, you know, if they just don't look like they're doing well, to call us, and we will, if that turkey is definitely, you know, ill to the point where it's going to, you know, eventually not make it, then we will dispatch that animal. But not only do we put it out of its misery, but we also collect it so that we can necropsy it, so we can study to determine the cause of death. And that has been really, has provided so much information to us. So we now know that the most common, you know, diseases in turkeys in Pennsylvania are you know, lesions on their head and neck and sometimes on their legs. But from collecting and necropsying, we found out that it's not just avian pox. It can be avian pox. It can be this newer disease called lymphoproliferative disease, or it can be a bacterial infection, which we see more often, you know, towards the end of the summer. But yeah, so, you know, it used to be we'd see these lesions on a turkey's head and we'd say, oh, that's pox. Well, no, not necessarily. Now that we've actually collected and done the analyses, we've, you know, so we've been able to gain a lot of information. Blackhead.
I was going to ask you if avian pox is the same as blackhead, or is that a different?
It's different. Okay. I was just going to say, yeah. So I don't know where the name blackhead came from, but it's actually histoluminosis is the
biological term. I'm going to have to call it blackhead because I have no idea what you just said.
but it does not cause a blackhead. You know, avian pox or lymphoproliferative disease or bacterial infections will have those lesions on the head to create kind of a blackish head. Mm. Blackhead is actually a liver disease. So it's internal.
Really?
Yeah. So you don't see it. The turkey will, you know, kind of go limp, and that's mainly, the histaminosis is mainly from poultry, from domestic poultry. And so, you know, it's,
so keep your chickens away from your wild turkeys, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, so some other diseases, we're not out of the woods with West Nile virus, but it looks like that's not a concern for Pennsylvania's turkeys like it is for grouse. But we're also looking at, you know, the effect of co-infection on all different aspects, maybe even a reproduction. We don't know, but you know, the Game Commission has this this cooperative with University of Pennsylvania. And so we now have the ability to work directly with, a whole array of veterinarians and conduct more research on diseases on all wildlife. So that is just a tremendous opportunity that we have going forward.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, obviously we're in the midst of a bad problem with CWD and the wildlife futures and UPenn. I mean, it's just, it's a battle we don't want to, none of us want to do, but we're in the best place in the world right now to take care of those problems. And again, if it's not the cooperation, if it wasn't for the cooperation that we get from our hunters out there, we're leaps and bounds ahead of so many places in this country. And I want to talk about another thing that you have to take into consideration in Pennsylvania is the amount of hunters that we have. I mean, that's part of your management plan. I mean, there's, to put it in perspective, I was talking to a gentleman the other night in South Carolina, the home of the National Wild Turkey Federation, and he was comparing it to Pennsylvania. And I said to my friend, I'm like, do you realize that South Carolina, I just got these numbers. That's why I wasn't like I was being a stuff knower. I got it from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I said, South Carolina has 220,000 licensed hunters for everything, deer, turkeys, and everything. I said, the state we live in, Pennsylvania, we have over that in turkey hunters alone. So that has to play a big role that a lot of people don't really get the concept of how big of a role that plays in our management.
Yeah, so we do have to be more conservative with our harvest strategies. And it's the fall season. You know, we have to be really, really cautious with fall season setting. But the spring timing. The timing of the spring season is vital for Pennsylvania because of the number of hunters that we have. If we allowed 200,000 spring turkey hunters, in the woods before the mating and nesting really has kicked in, then, you know, we'd really be hurting our turkey population. So we have to time that season appropriately for the biology to occur before we have all of those hunters in the woods.
And that's a great point, because obviously you probably are tired of hearing this, because I know I am. And I've been on the other side of the fence not knowing what we face. And I hear it, I've heard it 10 times this week. You know, our season's too late. You just hit the nail on the head. If we had 30,000 turkey hunters, we probably could come in earlier.
Yeah.
But we probably have 250,000 turkey hunters right now. So it's a world of difference. And if we don't let those hens successfully breed and successfully, you know, the best we can get them on the nest, that would really affect our population. I mean, in general. And that's why we hit on May 1st. And the cool thing about that is other states are seeing declines and they're following your lead on that one. They're following our Pennsylvania's lead.
Well, Pennsylvania's, yeah. That luckily that came in, you know, when we started the spring season in 1968. But then our hen study research from 2010 to 2015, you know, we found the same, you know, very similar numbers, dates, I should say, for incubation. So our median date of incubation is somewhere, you know, on average is between May 1st and May 4th. And so that means that, you know, about 50% of your hens are actually incubating a nest. They've finished the breeding. They've laid a full clutch. They lay about an egg a day. So they've laid their full clutch, and now they're incubating for 28 days. And once they're incubating, they have a much lower probability of abandoning that nest if they're disturbed by a hunter. So, you know, why allow 200,000+ turkey hunters in the woods before a hen is, you know, less likely to abandon that nest? I mean, isn't it all about reproduction?
Right. It's about turkeys.
Yeah, yeah. And the other good thing, too, is that, well, once those hens are occupied, then that frees the gobblers up. And, you know, and they're looking for you know, other hens to breed. And here come the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, you know, your gobbling is always going to decrease when you have that many turkey hunters coming into the woods the first week of the season. It's not only going to educate the gobblers, but, you know, you have less gobblers. I mean, the first couple of weeks of the season is, you know, almost 50% of your about 50% of your harvest. And so of course you're going to hear fewer gobblers, but they're also, you know, the amount of turkey hunters is also playing into the amount of gobbling that you're hearing.
Oh, there's no doubt. We have to face it. We're a predator. And
right.
We're one of those predators. I mean, bottom line is, if I woke up every morning and gobbled and somebody made a sound that made me gobble, and then all of a sudden they missed me or I went in there, I mean, they're survivalists, and you see something that's wrong, you're going to, you know, they can't reason like we can, but they're going to stay away from danger because that's what they live their whole life, staying away from danger. And that hits the nail on the head, and it makes so much sense. I mean, I remember years ago when I would talk to folks and I would always want our season to be earlier, but I didn't realize, and now working here at the agency, I'm so proud of it, is that we have more turkey hunters than a lot of states have total hunters. So it makes a difference. And our turkeys they get educated. People argue about it all the time, but pressure definitely can make a difference. And, you know, we're hunting, you're lucky and are successful in Pennsylvania. You can go anywhere in the country and be successful spring turkey hunting, in my opinion. And I argue with my Alabama buddies all the time about that. I mean, the other thing is that happens when you have poor recruitment years or bad hatches, multiple years in a row, bad weather, whatever it is, you have a lot more gobblers out there on the landscape that are 3 years old or better. Well, when it's just like big bucks, they get a little bit more wise. And and you get a bunch of old turkeys that have been around a few springs, they're tough. I mean, it's like a herd elk, a herd bull elk. He knows those girls are around. He's going to stay around them, and sometimes all season. He's just he's a tough turkey. You've got to strap your boots up when you know. To me, the best turkey seasons are when we have a lot of 2-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like if we have a great hatch this year, 2 years from now, and the competition's fierce out there. There's lots of gobbling, and that's the springs that turkey hunters live for, in my opinion.
And I think that's one of the springs that we're going to see this year. We had a good hatch.
We're not telling anybody that.
Okay.
No, I'm teasing.
But the other thing is that I love about the Pennsylvania season is that it's a month long. I mean, and boy, I have a lot of good success usually around the middle of the third week of the season. You have much fewer hunters out there, and the gobblers are starting to, you know, come around again, to starting to call again. And man, I have some pretty fun gobbling activity and fun hunting.
That's another one of those secrets we don't want to tell anybody. But and it's exactly right. And I know I've heard them gobble, and I've seen action in June, late June.
Well,
I mean, you hear it all the time. It's over. It's never over until it's over, and it's not over at the end of May. Now there's some gobblers that are probably checked out, but there's always, it's just like the rut. You know, the rut happens, the peak happens, and then when you get on the backside, especially those older bucks, they know there's going to be some does that are going to cycle late, and they're still going to be on the prowl. And turkeys are the same way. That late season, those older turkeys become more vulnerable because most of the time that's when their hens are definitely going.
Right.
In what I've seen over the years.
Maybe we should talk about those older gobblers and the average lifespan of
a gobbler.
I'd love to. Yeah. So in Pennsylvania, we found that the average lifespan of a Pennsylvania gobbler is about 3 years old.
Okay.
And so if you don't harvest that 3-year-old gobbler that in this spring, he doesn't have a very high probability of surviving to become a 4-year-old bird. I mean, there are some, but, you know, on average life expectancy. So if you harvest that 3-year-old bird, that harvest is pretty much compensatory to natural mortality. So you're not harming the future population. First of all, that gobbler's already bred. And second of all, he's probably not going to be around the next year. Mm-hmm. So if you're taking him out, you're not really doing anything to the population.
Oh, that's
so that's good, yeah. compensatory mortality.
Yeah.
That's what we like.
I'm glad I didn't know all this stuff when I was young.
No, well, and then I also tell people, you know, if you've already harvested turkeys in Pennsylvania, and if you're not a mentor or for a young kid, then let those jakes go. But you know, if it's your first gobbler, you know, if it's your first turkey, or you know, you're just getting into turkey hunting, or if you're a junior, then you know, there's plenty of jakes around. But the nice thing about letting those jakes go is that jakes have a very high natural survival to the next year. So they're naturally recruiting to become those real fun 2-year-old birds, mm-hmm. that we like to hunt the next year. And in Pennsylvania, you know, our harvest rate of jakes is only about 28% on average.
Of the total.
Of the total. Okay. Yeah. And, of jakes, you know, jake harvest rate is only about 28%,
okay.
whereas adult gobbler is about 38%. So you have natural, you know, you have that, you have those turkey hunters that are helping to manage the population, mm-hmm. by letting that jake go, because you know he's going. They have a high probability. I think it's about 65% survival of our jakes into the adult population.
Oh, that's great. I mean, if you're a new turkey hunter or anything, you know, but if you've had success many springs, yeah, if you can let him walk, he's gonna be a lot more fun next spring for
right.
sure. And be able to spread genes and become an, I agree 100%. But if you're younger, for sure, you know, if that's your first turkey, don't even worry about it. If he's
right.
gobbling, makes your heart pound, and we know what you're gonna buy a hunting license and be a hunter the rest of your life. I don't care if he has a 1-inch beard that you can see. I mean, that's cool. But Before we end up, I just want to talk about what's going on right now, your turkey study you're doing this winter. You know, we talked about, you know, you've been out this winter and trapping, and obviously when people see turkey traps, they think of trap and transfer and this and that, and we're trading them to Alaska for grizzly bears or mountain lions or whatever, but that's not what's happening, right?
Absolutely, right, yeah. So we've been leg banding male turkeys last year and this year, and now hopefully it looks like it'll be operational, meaning at an annual process, in order to get spring harvest rates and annual survival rates of our gobblers, and that's part of our population model. So this is it's similar to to our waterfowl banding and to our bear ear tagging. So we put leg bands on turkeys in the winter, and then we see what percentage of those banded birds are harvested in the spring. And we can get spring harvest rates of our gobblers and our jakes by wildlife management unit. Now, it's a little different from our previous gobbler study. The previous gobbler study, we got a statewide harvest and survival rates. This is now going to give us the ability to get those harvest rates by wildlife management unit, so we can more adequately, manage the turkey populations by wildlife management unit, because, obviously areas in, the north central part of the state have much different turkey densities and turkey hunter numbers than in, say, the southwestern part of the state and whatnot. So yeah, it's, these turkeys are being banded and released right at that same spot. We catch them. We take some measurements, we look them over a bit, we put a leg band on them, and we release them right there.
Yeah, very non-invasive, and yes. just for folks that think that you just put some dots on a map, this is, you're dialing it down and getting in the weeds. And every, I know there's some exciting stuff happening in the future that we can't talk about yet, but we're on the verge of spring, please, if you will, let's make this an annual event, and hopefully next spring we can come back and next coming into spring, well, I guess we are in spring, we can talk about what a great hatch we had in 2021. I mean, of all the stuff that happens, we deserve a good hatch of turkeys, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, those cicadas might be our saving grace. And one other thing about the sure. leg banding project is, we had tremendous success this year. So if turkey hunters do harvest a turkey with a leg band, there's a toll-free number, but there's also an email address. And so they can report that harvest to us in order for us to get the leg band number so that we can determine the harvest rate. But we also, encourage people to report, even if they find a turkey dead, or even if they see a leg band, laying in the woods from a part of a turkey or something. That information can also help us to determine, survival. But we also can then tell the hunter where and when that turkey was banded and how old that turkey is. So that's pretty neat information for the hunter to know as well.
We did a podcast real quick a couple of weeks ago with a gentleman named Corey Galvis, and he's in the big woods up in Tioga County, and he was lucky and shot a leg-banded turkey, and he was shed hunting that next winter, I think it was, and found a turkey leg with a leg band like 3 miles away from where he shot this turkey, and they were banded together, and the one across the mountain, across the valley, was natural causes. So it was an amazing story, but that just goes to show you, and like you said, we encourage, and we want to talk to you, we want to hear from folks out there, and we're all in this conservation together as hunters, as Pennsylvania Game Commission, as people that just love wildlife. Our lines are always open, but we're gonna have to say goodbye for today. I hate it because I can talk about turkeys for days, but thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your dedication to our agency. I know there's lots more to cover, and we'll get that next time for sure, but we sure appreciate everything that you do for the agency and for the wild turkey, Mary Jo.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate it. No this problem. Was fun. I enjoy it, and I look forward to our next round.
Yes, ma'am.
Round.
We can do this every month as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
On On behalf of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, thank you for tuning in. And we hope that every day of field is filled with memories to last a lifetime. We are committed to leave conservation and wildlife better for the future. And we hope you can tune in next time to the PGC's Call of the Outdoors.